Never say never, that it's all over.
Yeah.
Well, that's the worst.
Want to make sure that we get an accurate time. It's 9:04 on August 2nd. I'd like to get things started. I'd like to introduce John Leahy as our Chief Financial Officer. He joins us. He's been here since June 1. Him and Cindy have a common background. They both came to us from Sumter County. I'd like to introduce Marie Brooks. She's the Treasury Analysis Analyst. She basically records and does analytical work in the investments. At this time, I need to take roll. Kent is not here. Rick Horst is unable to attend. John Leahy is here. Cindy Kelly?
Here.
John Leahy?
Here.
Rick Hornet, I'm here. And Marie Brooks. Next item, I'd like to review and submit the minutes for approval. Has everyone reviewed the minutes? Were there any exceptions? Okay. Need a motion to accept them?
Motion for acceptance.
Second.
Second. Okay. The minutes are accepted. That being said, we can go ahead and start with the reports. Sawgrass is the first person up. And basically, we have Girls Quarterly Review.
Great.
I just want to take a moment and introduce myself. I'm Christine Turner, and I work with David, but I work in the marketing and client service area. With Chris Greco, I don't know if you've met him as well. But that just means that if you have any questions or concerns about your account, please feel free to give me a call as well as David.
All right. Again, I'm Dave Furfine, Portfolio Manager and Partner at Sawgrass Asset Management. 3 months ago, while you all might not have been here, for those of you who were, the consensus in the marketplace was possibly the economy was doing better. We were getting a bit of good news with a bit of bad news, and the weakness that we saw in the past quarters was diminishing. So home prices were falling less rapidly. People were getting laid off or fired less rapidly, and we were thinking that that was good news in the economy. The 3 months since then, the tide has turned, and we're starting to see weaker numbers going forth, and the numbers consistently are surprising us on the weaker side, which is putting fear into the marketplace that we might be worried about deflation, not inflation. A couple of the major things that have happened is the contagion of Greece and Europe is spreading even into the United States. And as such, the bond market is responding with a nice strong rally. Interest rates that were already low got lower. And what that means for your portfolio, it's a portfolio of short-term bonds. Their prices are going up. You have better than expected returns, if you will, and looking forward, even lower future performance on the account. Without getting too deep into the numbers, let's take a look at the portfolio, and we can go back to talking a little bit about the economy. I have to leave something for my buddies at the other end of the table to talk about. Quick performance review is in the upper right-hand corner. Performance of the Sawgrass portfolio is about 158, positive return, slightly behind that of the benchmark of 171. A little bit weaker performance relative to the benchmark one because the benchmark and the market was surprisingly strong. If you take that 170-ish number and multiply it times four, you get almost a 7% annualized return if you want to extrapolate that. Don't, because it can't happen three more quarters in a row. But I guess as soon as I say it can't, it will. Very strong very strong, and if you stretch it out, our numbers do get a little bit more positive relative to the benchmarks, which are three-year number at 630 versus 6. We got some more detail in following pages. But like I said, our outlook in the lower right-hand corner is that we've got a pause in the economic growth. We had a GDP release that showed that for the quarter, second quarter of 2010 at 2.5 growth. We were looking at 3.7 the quarter prior, so we're slowing the growth rate. I mentioned the inflation versus deflation debate. Deflation is a very rare item. It's an environment of falling prices, and what that means is, why would I buy anything today when tomorrow I expect the price to be lower? You see it in home values, but it hasn't been rampant throughout the rest of the economy. It happened in the 30s during the Great Depression. What it does is it feeds on itself. If I'm going to buy something and it's cheaper tomorrow, I won't buy it, and they won't make it, and they'll lay off more people, and then there's less money to go around. So it just feeds on itself. So it's a very rare, very dangerous environment. The Fed and the government are going to do everything they can to avoid that. That's why they target inflation at 2, 2.5, 3% inflation, just to stay away from that zero, the fact that we might dip into falling prices. Fed's kind of in the corner, are going to keep rates low for an exceptional time, exceptionally low for an exceptional time, extended time. The most recent snippet out of the Federal Reserve is out of the Chairman Bernanke's release, his testimony a couple weeks ago in front of Congress. He used the term unusually uncertain in referencing the economic environment. It's okay to be unusual and it's okay to be uncertain, but they're both at the same time. So if he says it's uncertain, I'm not going to say I know what's going on. The little snippet of what helped, what hurt with our portfolio for the long period of time, maybe the one-year time horizon, I have been concerned that the rally in the bond market has got to come to an end. I'm trying to be more defensive because I don't know what's going on, and this uncertainty adds to the volatility in the market, so we're trying to play a little bit close to the vest. So we're defensive in terms of the length of the maturities that we have in your portfolio, maintaining a little bit shorter stance to be more defensive for when rates rise. They haven't risen, but we've done that. To compensate for that, we have a overweight in short-term corporate bonds, which have a little bit incrementally higher yields, and they have done a little bit better. Not in each period, but over the longer period, they have done very well. So those two things balance and get you a little bit closer to home. Page 4 has a little bit more detail on the performance numbers. You can see that the 158 for the quarter versus the 170 benchmark, if you stretch it out over your fiscal year from 930 to 630, Sawgrass delivered a 317 versus your benchmark at a 315. So slightly better than benchmark performance. And even the one-year number, just touching one basis point above that of the benchmark. The longer-term numbers show some very solid numbers, 3 years significantly above. We're managing almost $67 million of your funds today, which is a little bit over $1 million more than the beginning of this performance period. Looking forward, the yield to maturity on your portfolio in Sawgrass was just a touch over under 1.4, 1.38, slightly better than the benchmark yield to maturity because of our preponderance of corporate bonds within your portfolio. We have underweighted treasuries, overweighted corporate bonds, amongst other things, and that gives you a superior yield to maturity. One of the most important data elements on this page was the duration or maturity. You'll see that the duration of the assets is smaller or lower. We've got more short bonds than long bonds, carrying at about 85% of the benchmark duration, trying to protect the asset values when rates do start trending up.
I want to just interject on this. We are on a rotating basis, and so you were the first one to go this time, and everyone did was performing under their benchmark this time, this quarter. Okay. On the short term, do you want to address that,
The reason why we underperformed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you positioning for the next quarter?
I think it's great. I just turned to the page where I've got the supplement. You were perfect.
I wanted to say that you're the first under fire. So
I don't know how many we
got.
You
get the answer for you got.
I looked at the Bogdan's report. I don't know how many more. I've got a couple more to share. Taking a peek in the Bogdan book, I was a little behind PFM this quarter and trouncing Stable River. I think I was a basis point ahead of them for a quarter. So, you gotta claim victory when you can. You'll notice that in different times, different managers outperform or underperform, and that's one of the benefits of having a multi-manager. The main driver of our underperformance was the defensive nature in the maturities. We were shorter, longer-term bonds rallied more in a falling interest rate environment. Having said that, the sector distributions also contributed to the performance variances. What you see in the handout I passed out is your portfolio is in the first two columns, the benchmarks the second two columns, and then the variances are calculated in the last three. If you take a look in the middle for just a brief moment, your benchmark, the top line is Treasury, so the Treasury weighting in your benchmark is about 58%. And they earned 204 in the quarter. Sawgrass had about 21% Treasury weighting, and our performance of those 20% was 1.84. So I had less, and if you look at the benchmarks, 2.04 versus the bottom, the 174, the benchmark return, the Treasury was the top performing sector. So the fact that we had too few of them underperformed, lost 11 basis points. That's what the allocation calculation shows. The fact that the bonds that we did own were just slightly under the 184 versus the 204 contributes to the negative 12 plus the positive 7, so you add those last two together. What that means is we made a mistake by not owning enough, and then we made another mistake by owning the wrong ones. That's within the Treasury space. If you look down at the corporate bond line item, you'll see that the corporate bonds even underperformed that in the benchmark of the agency securities, the Fannie Mae Freddie Mac securities. So the fact is that we had more, 36 versus 16, we lost 10%, 10 basis points on that as well. But our bonds earned 196, the specific securities that we chose to own, outperformed the bonds that are in the benchmark. So they made the 11 plus the 14 or 25. So we made 15 in corporate bonds and we lost 10, 20, I don't know, high teens on the treasuries. So you can see the wiggles with the sector distributions in this kind of attribution analysis. You see this type of performance reporting frequently in an equity portfolio with different sectors, but we can do it here as well. So that's the very detailed answer to why. And then you got to put the shortness negative as well. This ties in with the graph on page 6, which shows in our weightings at the end of the period. By the way, the handout is on our all of the accounts that Sawgrass manages in the style. So there's a little bit of rounding between your particular account and what the report shows.
Okay.
But not a meaningful wiggle. The rest of the report shows just some broad distributions with regards to maturities, sectors, and quality rating. I'll stop and just draw your attention to page 9, your compliance page, within compliance on all your different limitations within the portfolio. Looking forward, I think the main thing you got to be concerned with is the 2-year Treasury note right now is yielding 55 basis points. For a year. Your benchmark is
yield to maturity about 1.5. So if interest rates don't move, the next 12 months is going to deliver about 1.5% return to your portfolio. It's totally different than the last 10 years that you've been in looking at. So as you go forward, I think you need to work in a lower expectations of future returns. I don't know, maybe we'll get a consensus, or we'll hear from the other managers, trying to get a next 12-month number with this portfolio. It might be it might be near that 1.5 number if I were to pick a number right now. Pause if there's any questions. Great.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Motion to accept the progress report.
Second.
Well, the next one is Stable River. We'll take a look at JP. Go ahead.
Sure. JP Arzinski from Stable River. Rick Nelson, who's our CEO and CIO, is with me today. I start out by kind of saying that, you know, to echo a lot of what David said, which is that, you know, the economy is kind of cuspy right now. You know, we seem to be kind of teetering back and forth between whether or not we're, you know, moving towards recovery or, you know, moving, you know, maybe towards a, you know, another period of a recession, you know, a double dip. You probably heard that. It's thrown around a lot right now. Whereas, you know, going into the fourth quarter of last year and into the first quarter of this year, you know, it seemed that pretty certain that we were not going to have, you know, a double dip recession. And as David mentioned, we've seen some signs now that, you know, the economy is slowing down again. I do think you need to kind of couch that from the standpoint, though, of saying that even though we just got second quarter GDP at 2.4%, and that is slower than where we were first quarter, so directionally we are slowing, 2.4% is probably a pretty decent number given what we've seen this economy go through from a credit contraction standpoint, as severe as it was. It's still a fairly positive number. I think the biggest detractors that we're fighting in this economy right now is the lack of job growth. We're just not seeing any type of significant contribution in the private sector of bringing employees on board and, you know, thereby increasing payroll. So when you look at the economy, you've got this 10% overhang of unemployment out there. Not a lot of indicators that we're going to begin to work that off anytime soon. In fact, you've got, you know, Ben Bernanke and the various Fed governors saying that it'll probably be until 2012 until we get to see that unemployment number move well below 9%. So, you know, we've got, you know, a period ahead of us, call it 2 years, where it's going to be a slow grind. When you think about how that impacts GDP, you've got 70% of GDP is basically consumer-related, and you've got basically 1 out of 10 consumers right now that aren't working, and call maybe another 2 out of that 10 that are working at a reduced rate or at a reduced salary. So thereby, their marginal ability to consume more is thereby, you know, decreased. So you've got all these pressures on, you know, GDP going forward. And, you know, we thought that maybe stimulus package that we saw, you know, enacted in 2009 was going to have more traction. And we're seeing it kind of wear off right now. And it hasn't provided necessarily as much traction from the job front as we thought.
Well, those are temp jobs for all intents and purposes. I mean, we got millions of dollars in ERA money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it took 6 weeks to overlay a road. Well, so I employed somebody for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Right.
And, you know, that was not employment. That
right.
was not going to, that wasn't even paying their mortgage. I mean, you know.
It helped out for a period, and
right.
now it's waning.
It's waning.
Right.
You know, and ours are wrapping up. We're done. We're in a closeout phase on almost all of our projects because it was, you know, you had to get shovel ready, you had to get it done, we had to commit all the funding by a certain date and, you know, get the money out there, get it going, and so it's like you had this infusion, and then, you know, Ocala's seen very high unemployment,
mm-hmm.
and our foreclosure rate is continuing to skyrocket. Our the values of our home prices have not declined, but they've plummeted. We lost another 11.6% from last year. We lost 9.8% the year before, 10.2% the year prior. I mean, we're we're spiraling downward.
Yeah.
And the furloughs and short work weeks and...
Yeah, so from that standpoint...
I agree that 2 years is probably optimistic.
So Ocala is a little microcosm of, you know, the general national economy, and you're going to see little microcosms that are a little bit better and a little bit worse. But, you know, at the margin, everybody's kind of in the same boat right now. We're kind of muddling along, you know, a recovery right here. It's just not very strong. And, in fact, if you want to kind of look in graphically at how, you know, weak the recovery is, if you look at page 18, there's a chart here which we show, you know, various job growth in various, you know, economic recoveries after years of recession. And you can see that we're, you know, the dotted red line is your average, and we're well below trend for this stage in a recovery, you know, post-recession. So what does that kind of mean, you know, for the portfolios, for you, for fixed income investors? It means that, you know, you're going to basically continue to see very low interest rates for an extended period of time. I think that the Federal Reserve, if you look on page 2, sorry to kind of bounce you around here a little bit, but, you know, the Federal Reserve in their most recent statement kind of became a little bit more cautious. And, you know, I think the biggest line to take away from that, I kind of bulleted here for you, which is that financial conditions now are less supportive of economic growth, reflecting, you know, that greater degree of uncertainty that Ben Bernanke, you know, talked about in his Humphrey Hawkins testimony. So here we are with the 2-year note at 55 basis points. You know, the 10-year note is well below 3%. So you're looking at very low rates, probably for an exceptionally long period of time here. So in terms of couching your performance going forward, I think David's, you know, spot on that, you know, you're going to see a very low rate of return on this money going forward. And I think that you're, you know, most municipalities, most public bodies across this country are, you know, coming to grips with the fact that they've, you know, it puts pressure on their budgets. In the past, you know, you've been able to kind of augment tax receipts with returns on your investment portfolios to a certain degree. That's probably not going to help you going forward. But for how it impacted your returns for the quarter, we'll kind of look at page...
Just on the economy, so sorry. It's not total doom and gloom here, Jay.
No, I'm not trying to be on doom and gloom, sorry.
I consider that realistic, not
doom. Well, the one...
things are great and, you know, rosy-colored glasses.
Right. The only thing I would add, though, is we are not calling for a double-dip recession. The, you know, the National Bureau of Labor Statistics is the one that determines, you know, when you start a recession, when you end a recession. They still haven't even come out and say that we ended the first recession, which we think ended in June of 2009. But, you know, Ben Bernanke got his nickname Helicopter Ben before he took over as Fed chairman because he's a student of the Depression. And when he was teaching, he said at one point in time, I would never let this country go through another depression like that. I would literally fly over cities with bags of money and drop the money out of the helicopter. And, you know, and they've done that.
We need help.
You look at what where our deficit is and what we spent. I mean, they've done a tremendous amount of stimulus. They're not going to stop at this point and let us fall into another recession or depression. So we think we're going to bounce along here, as David and JP said, for an extended period of time. And it's going to be very extended, as you pointed out.
Of course, I think the difference is, you know, you've got, excuse the expression, your Wall Street heads who are saying one thing, but you've got your rank-and-file people on the ground mm-hmm. who don't have a job, haven't had a job for 2 years, would disagree strongly that we're not still in a recession or a depression. If you've been unemployed for 18 months,
right.
You've lost your home, you've lost your car, you're living with your parents,
right.
You know, you don't have anything you had, and the best job you can get is minimum wage, and you still can't feed your family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a huge disconnect between what's actually happening and what the economists are willing to admit
mm-hmm.
is happening.
No, and jobs are key, as you're pointing out.
So, you know, I mean, so I just, you
lost
know,
in the data.
Yeah.
Right. The consumer confidence is just not there. I mean, and if you look to corporate America, they are adding fees and raising prices all over the place to try to supplement their
the loss of income
because the volume is not there. I mean, you know, they were talking about the airline industry that, you know, on the news this morning, and, you know, Spirit Airlines, which is fabulous for their low rates,
they're now charging a $45 fee to carry on your bag.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I'm going to be jumping around before I pay $45 to carry my own bag on the plane and pay you for some chips.
Well, that's what's happened, though, when they charge the fee to put the bag underneath. Everybody carried their bag on,
right.
And now they don't have the overhead, so they just created another problem. They didn't take it through all the way.
Well, now there's no, people aren't going to fly, so they're not going to want to pay to carry their bags. And some of the banks have instituted some, well, they're not calling it a late fee, they're calling it some type of a convenience fee. So, you know, Bank of America is a good example. If you, your mortgage is due on the 1st, they have these color codings. I don't know if you've seen them. They were on the pink, blue, you know, they're these pastel colors. So if you pay in the 1st 4 days, there's a convenience fee of $3. If you pay in the 2nd 4 days, there's a convenience fee of $6. You know, now your payment's not late till the 10th, but if you don't pay on the 1st, each day you pay additional $3 for the convenience of making your payment.
Waiting till the 10th.
Yes. And now, and then, of course, post the 10th would be whatever late fee would be assessed, plus an additional convenience fee of $15 for them being willing to take your late payment. And I mean, as they were explaining it, I thought, what? I mean, I don't know.
Well, that's part of the financial regulatory reform is going to make things more transparent like that.
So now they're, well, these fees were not there until the legislation passed. Yeah. Now they thought of, you know, they're coming up with creative, but they can't call it a late fee because your payment's not late, it's a convenience fee. And I thought, well, that's interesting.
Well, they're jumping on the banks for the overdraft fees that they were charging. Mm-hmm. So they're... Banks have to put something in place for that. And what you're going to wind up doing is paying for your checking account.
Right.
You know, you're going to be paying, you know, like you say, it feels like more upfront fees. It is for some people that weren't late and overdrafting their accounts all the time, but you're going to be paying it on the front end and it'll be more transparent.
Which speaks to what, you know, you were speaking about, Dave, with that kind of self-fulfilling prophecy where people feel like, well, things are going to be bad, so I'm just not going to spend any money. And now if I have to spend money over here to do this and, you know, I can't afford to do that, and I'm going to only work 30 hours a week. And so it just, and again, I that huge disconnect with Wall Street saying, oh, it's going to be great. You know, but if you're over here and you can't buy groceries and you have to pay a fee to make your payment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just.
And it depends on whose perspective you're asking about the economy. It was just Ronald Reagan that said...
The people on the ground are the ones whose money you need to be spent. So that's the perspective Wall Street needs to start looking at it from, and not from your perspective up here, from those that are gainfully employed. And
well, that was, Reagan said, a recession is when my neighbor loses his job. Right. A depression is when I lose my
job.
And a recovery is when we get Carter out of the White House.
You see, I think the labor force in some cases are taking lower skilled jobs, low paying jobs.
Oh, absolutely.
We've read some things where people, their jobs available, but somebody says, hey, I'll come on 3 weeks when my unemployment runs out, they can draw the unemployment because the job they're taking doesn't give them the bump that they need for discretional spending.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to Rick's point, though, I mean, we do have a tendency to hear to talk, you know, kind of, you know, make sure that your expectations are, you know, properly, you know, anchored into, you know, what reality is going to be, as you're saying. But, you know, it's not all, it's bad. You know, but it's not all bad because 2.4% is still growth.
It's still growth, right?
Right, and you still have you've got 10% unemployment, and it's more structural than frictional, you know, which is what it was in the past. So it's going to take a lot longer to get people who used to be auto workers, you know, or in the housing industry. They've got to acquire a new set of skills. It takes a longer period of time. So we're kind of going through that process. But when you look out there. What happened post Lehman Brothers was that the whole world stopped because they didn't know what was going to happen.
Right.
Well, we've now got the whole world saying, okay, well, it didn't stop, you know. I mean, it wasn't Armageddon. It was, we're going to continue going forward. So we've kind of come back up. We've brought things back online. And there are still 9 out of 10 people that are working. And those people are still consuming. And, you know, the 6 out of 10 or 7 out of 10 that feel pretty confident about their jobs, well, they're spending. I mean, you look at, you know, we were talking about corporate earnings before the meeting a little bit. 77%, you know, of companies that have reported here are beating, you know, expectations. And they're not just beating on the bottom line, they're beating on the top line too. So it's not just because they've cut employment to the bone, you know, but they've got good revenues coming in. You've got companies like, you know, Apple. Well, I mean, they can't sell enough iPads. I mean, there's insatiable demand. You've got, you know, BMW is sold out of the 5 Series, you know, which they just came out with, you know, for the next year. You know, so there is consumption out there. And, you know, these things will get righted. And, you know, as Rick kind of pointed out, you know, the Fed governors, they're on top of it. They were on top of it back during the crisis when maybe they acted a little bit late, but they came in, they said, look, we have got to flood this market. And they unleashed, you know, on the whole dam. I mean, they unloaded a ton of money into the economy, and we've seen it out there. It's taking a while for it to get sticky, and things will get better. And, you know, maybe 3 years from now, 4 years from now, we're talking about interest rates back at, you know, 2.5%, maybe 3%. You know, my concern is just making sure that you guys understand that for the, you know, foreseeable future, next 6 months, next 12 months, you're going to see some, you know, we're going to be talking about basis point type returns versus percentage type returns.
Right.
And there's a very good chance that we have several quarters where in here where it's like, okay, it was zero. And then once interest rates start going up, maybe we have a period of time. If they go up fast, you had a negative return for the quarter. But for right now, I think, you know, to Rick's point, we're getting better. It's just taking a slow period of time. So, you know, how has that impacted your portfolio? You know, for the last quarter, you know, if you look at page seven, I'm sorry, returns for the last quarter were 157 basis points. Again, that's a, given where we are in a relatively low interest rate environment, that's a pretty good return. You know, you annualize that, you're up, you know, north of 6%. That's not going to probably continue to happen going forward. We were behind your benchmark, which I think is the A or better, Merrill Lynch GovCredit, you know, with the new investment policy that you guys adopted. So that's 100, we're, you know, basically call it 17 basis points behind your benchmark for the quarter. All things considered, you know, pretty decent. Part of the reason why we underperformed is we were underweight treasuries. And, you know, the risk trade, quote-unquote, came off in the last quarter as concerns about the European, you know, exposure to Greece and whether or not that was going to, you know, expand to Portugal and Spain and Italy and Ireland. The concerns there kind of seemed to, you know, be abating. You know, we had the European stress test, which came out last week, showed, you know, basically you had 92 banks, 91 banks, you know, were tested. You know, and you had very minimal failures there. Now, a lot of people say that the test was, you know, an easy bar to get over. But at the end of the day, it's providing more transparency. The market's getting more comfortable. So while in the second quarter of this year, we saw corporate bond spreads widen out just a little bit, which if you look at page six, I believe, you'll see those just at the very tail there. You just see a little bit of widening in corporate bond spreads in your space, in the 1-3 and 1-5 sectors. You know, they're starting to kind of tighten back in here. And I think part of that tightening, you know, recently is the fact that, okay, again, 2-year treasury at 55 basis points. I can go buy a corporate bond for the same tenure, pick up another, you know, call it 70 to 110 basis points of spread for owning that corporate name. That's still investment grade. Corporate balance sheets are relatively strong. You know, the strongest they've been in 20 years, basically. You've got several trillion dollars in cash sitting on most S&P 500 companies' books right now, which are really the companies that are going to be in your portfolio. So they've got plenty of money to weather the storm. And so they've got the ability to pay those coupons. They've refied some of their debt down, so their interest expense going forward is way cheap. And, you know, we think that you've got relatively, it's a relatively easy trade at this point in time to be in the corporate space. So we've been overweight that. Now, with the risk trade coming off in the last quarter, it hurt us a little bit, but it hurt us by 17 basis points. Going forward, I think we make the carry on those bonds, and it's a positive attribute to your portfolio. In the same way, it's been a positive attribute for most of the quarters, you know, post Lehman Brothers, as bonds began to tighten up in the spring of 2009. If you want to turn to the next page after page 8, talks about the relative ranking of the portfolio. We are basically in the, you know, 8th percentile in a Lipper category if you force the portfolio into that category. And then if you go to page 9, you know, you're basically looking at some of the attributes of the portfolio. You know, our duration is, you know, continues to be relatively neutral. For the last several quarters, you know, we've, you know, been in that spot, that neutral to slightly short type of a space, because I think it gives us the most flexibility to react to an evolving landscape. You know, Rick, do you want to talk a little bit about what we see strategy-wise going forward?
Well, I think you already said, you know, we do like corporates going forward. We, you know, even like mortgages, despite how tight they've gotten as well. We just don't see a lot of supply in the mortgage market with the limited movement in housing. And so we think just the supply-demand dynamics continue to make mortgages, short mortgages, look attractive relative to even corporates at this point in time. So we'll probably stay with our duration, the neutral, the short, and continue to overweight spread product in the portfolio.
And just one last follow-up from the last meeting. Back at the last meeting, there was some discussion about concerns about Goldman Sachs. You know, you guys are probably aware, but Goldman Sachs settled with the SEC, so that issue is now behind them. You know, we owned a Goldman Sachs bond in the portfolio at the end of last quarter. We continue to own that bond. You know, we feel pretty confident in that security at this point in time, in that company. I think we'll continue to own that going forward. So, you know, that bond continues to perform for you at this point. But I just wanted to, kind of follow up and let you know where, A, Goldman Sachs stood with the investigation and where we stand with the company.
And the reason I'm here today is also to thank you all for the business. We really enjoy working with you all very much. But also there's been a lot of news about SunTrust, Bridgeworth, Stable River. The sale of Bridgeworth to Henderson out of the UK has completely fallen off. That deal is not going to be done. We did announce a couple of weeks ago the sale of the money market funds, which are part of Stable River, to Federated Group. That will close by the end of the year, and hopefully after that things will quiet down for us, and we could use that.
I was going to ask you all about that. You all are going to remain with SunTrust as part of their operations.
The plan is right now that Stable River will remain part of Bridgeworth, which will be part of SunTrust.
Okay.
And at this point.
So I guess as a follow-up, if I may,
sure.
What impact, if any, does that transaction have on your area?
That's a good question. There will be some impact felt on Stable River. Our money market funds were about $17 billion of assets under management. We will have about $10.5 billion of assets under management once the money market funds move out. So there will have to be somewhat of a resizing of Stable River, and we're working on that at this point in time.
Good.
Is there anything else?
If you have any other questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Y'all just fell a little short on the 7-year performance. Is there any...
A lot of the reason we just fell short there, is most of the reason our performance shortfall on the longer term track records is, that time period when we had Lehman Brothers,
okay.
And that whole credit spread widening. If you'll recall, we also had several, non-agency mortgages in the portfolio at that point in time. And those mortgages, they went from being, at par when we bought them to pricing down, at 60 cents on the dollar. They've since, subsequently recovered, significantly up to around 85 cents on the dollar or so, and some all the way up to 90. But, during that time period when we went from par to market pricing down around 60 cents on the dollar, those were some significant hits to our performance during that time period. But if you look in the relatively recent, 1 year and 2 year number, you'll see that the portfolio, had a big jump in performance as those things repriced back upwards. So it's working to try to smooth things out, but it's not totally worked its way through the numbers yet.
And just one other.
Sure.
How'd last month be for you guys?
I don't have those numbers on me right now, but I would say, based on where treasuries were, I'd say, it was probably a positive month. But again, it's just going to basically be a 1/12 of what you're clipping coupon-wise, so call it 1/12 of, 2%, and 1/12 of 1.5% is probably a pretty fair, so 10 basis points or so. for your portfolio performance for the last month, but I'll run those numbers and get them over to you as soon as I get back with them.
Because positioning or make sure that you're heading in the right direction.
Right.
Yeah. Any other questions, comments? Cindy, would you like to make a motion?
Motion to accept.
Yeah, Pam.
All right. Well, I think, not to rehash everything that's been said, but I think the Wall Street Journal really says it all, is that the recovery loss is pretty much in place. And that's been pretty much our concern for a couple of years now, is that we didn't really feel the economy is really going anywhere. And I think until we really see two basic improvements, is the housing market and the unemployment rate, until those two see some improvement, we're not going to see the Federal Reserve raise rates. They've been pretty passionate about the unemployment rate, and the housing market is one of the two key numbers. You can look at a lot of other numbers. You can look at a lot of other statistics, but until those two see some improvements, I don't think we're going to see rates moving up. It's not just the United States. It's global. The economy is slowing down around the entire world. So there's a lot of things that have to happen. We're no longer the dominant player in a lot of these markets. And if you see what's happening in China, China's slowing down in their manufacturing. And I think that's going to be a sign to where we are going forward, and that's not going to be too good. So I really think that, I have to echo what JP was saying about interest rates, just expect low interest rates for some time. I don't think we're going to see much improvement on short-term rates. As far as your overnight rates, as far as rates in less than 1 year, or money market rates, we're going to see them at these dismal rates for some time. I wouldn't expect any really change until late 2011 or so before we see any kind of improvements. As far as the positioning of the portfolio, where we are in this particular segment of the yield curve, we saw rates decline. We talked about where the 2 year is now at all-time lows. We're probably going to experience that for some time. I don't really expect anything to change. There's a lot of bad news in the economy. I know we're talking, trying to make it positive here today, but there is just a lot of bad news. And we have a tremendous amount of deficit spending going on with the federal level. It has not really improved that much, so we're going to be paying high prices for that. International investors are concerned how much debt this country has taken on, and that's going to put additional pressures on our economy. So I think from a budgeting standpoint and where we are as far as returns, certainly expect these type of returns in this area, maybe even lower going forward. So be careful about that. There isn't a whole much return to be produced out of these portfolios, since we are such low rates. So it's going to be coming up to duration play, and I think also been some sector plays. And of course, we're always concerned about rates going up and what's going to happen to the value of the portfolio. So that's a concern among all three managers. Why I think we're all kind of a little bit south of the benchmark duration, because at some point when rates do go up, we have quite a bit of market value losses. I think at this point we have to kind of think about where we are against the benchmark, but also maybe more importantly, where we are in producing revenues for the city. We may sometimes get too concerned about benchmark position and duration because of the benchmark in place. But we may be even more concerned about producing revenues to meet your expectations. Maybe market value maybe needs to take a back seat for a little bit as we try to think about that. So I just would throw that out for the committee to kind of think about what are the priorities going forward. Do we want to be concerned about duration and market value, or do we want to be concerned about income production given the way rates are so low? So just a consideration. And then I'll have Mel go through the numbers for you. We had a pretty good return. I think we're only a basis point or two behind the benchmark this time, so very, very well in line with the benchmark. But I'll have Mel go through the actual performance report for you.
I just want to interject, too. Y'all didn't do too bad as far as the benchmark goes, but you have to understand that we're paying you all a service fee, and we could get that return from an index. And on short term, you really can't, you can't do that on long term, but on short term, you just got to justify what we're doing here. And
sure,
that's what,
sure.
That's what we're here for.
Well, I think there's two charts on in your book on page A1 in the first tab that kind of put things in perspective. This is behind the first tab. On the first page there, there's two charts on the right-hand side. One is, this shows what happened to yields. The top one, top right-hand side there, shows what happened to yields and various maturities of Treasury securities during the quarter, and then what that's done over the last 12 months. And if you look at that, I mean, basically, you know, 3 month, 6 month, 1 year Treasury rates, you know, they declined a few basis points. 2 year Treasury rates, though, declined 41 basis points, and 5 year rates declined 75 basis points. So that's just changes in absolute rate. If you look at the chart right below that, you know, that converts that to a total return basis. And you've got the quarter in the light blue, and you've got the 1 year in the dark blue. So for the quarter, you know, we're in the 1-5 benchmark. You know, the quarterly return, this is Treasuries only, was 204. So the total return for, because of that drop in rates, was 2.04. You know, we've talked about the index that we're measuring against is 174. So we had very strong total return because of the drop in rates. And if you compare that to even longer maturities, you know, the 3-5 year total return for the quarter was 3.48, and over the last 12 months, almost 6.5%. So, you know, very strong numbers, as David said earlier. Don't extrapolate any of that and multiply it by four and think that's what you're going to get for a 12-month time period. But to put that in perspective, we also talked about, you know, volatility. We talked about being defensive. You know, that was one quarter in our favor. If rates go the other way, then we're behind that curve. So if rates went up, you know, 40 basis points, you know, instead of being a positive two, we're a negative two. You know, and our return for the quarter was 173. So if we, if this thing flips, and when it flips, you know, that's the concern that we all have. Of course, you know, there's a lot of conversation about, well, we don't think it's going to happen that fast, and we're all going to be nimble as it does happen. So that's where we're trying to add some value versus just a straight benchmark. But I think all of us would agree that, you know, given what's going on, as we've talked about in the economy, you know, we're not expecting an uptick in rates, you know, until maybe sometime next year, or to grind this thing out is the term that everybody's using. But we also know that we get unexpected events falling from the sky, and anything can happen almost at any time. So that's why we're all short the index, trying to be defensive, as we're talking about. And, you know, the last quarter, it played in our favor. You know, if we look at the portfolio itself, this is behind tab two. You know, the total return on our portfolio for the quarter, this is tab two, page D2, you know, was 173 versus the, you know, index of 174. So, you know, right in line with the benchmark. And in our portfolio duration, we ended the quarter at 83%. So we allowed it to drift shorter as we compare that to the first quarter. March, you know, we were pretty much right on top of the benchmark, so we did allow it to drift lower, you know, as the quarter transpired, because we were hitting new lows in interest rates almost on a daily basis. So we are defensive, and what that means in terms of our strategy, if you look on page B3, you know, this is our city's allocation, which is the second half of that page versus the index. And you know, the index had 57% in Treasuries. We were much lighter. We were 15%, much lighter because, you know, as I showed you on that first chart, the Treasuries weren't providing much in yield at all. You know, a few basis points if you're, you know, 6 to 12 months. So to get any yield on Treasuries at all, you got to get out, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And there are some benefits to do that. The curve is steep, so you do pick up some incremental yield. You hold those securities 6 months, 12 months. You roll down the curve, you pick up some incremental value in terms of a total return. So there is value to owning Treasuries as an alternative to cash, not necessarily as a long-term investment, though. But you know, the other issues here, I mean, the agency portfolio allocation, the index was 17%. We were a little heavily more oriented toward agencies with 28%. The corporates, you know, there's in the index, you know, the corporate allocation is about 15%, and we were higher. We had much higher allocation to corporates, which, you know, all of those things, we were much more diversified than basically the index was. So, you know, what we gave up in treasuries, we picked up in some of the other allocations. Maturity, as Steve mentioned, duration is a big part of our strategy going into here. Page B5 shows your maturity distribution. You know, it kind of jumps out at you that in the 2 to 3 year range, we actually, you know, increased our, you know, allocation as compared to where we were at the end of March. And at the same time, we underweighted our allocation that we were in longer term securities like 3 to 4 and 4 to 5 years. There's a little more detail on the next page, B6. You know, our allocation there in your investment portfolio, which is the gray bars, you know, jumps right out at you that in 2.5 to 3 years, that's really where we've been structuring the portfolio. That's a function of the steepness of the yield curve. It's also a function of some of these maturities that we're buying here. These are floating rate and or callable securities. So the expectations that they will be called, that gives us the ability to keep the duration a little shorter, even though the final maturity, you know, is in the 2 to 3 year range. So you know, our strategy at this point in time is pretty much a barbell, so to speak. On the short end, we're utilizing callable securities, where if you look at your transactions, you see we bought some floating rate securities during the course of the quarter, and then buying 2 to 3 year fixed rate securities with the expectation that we could roll down the curve. But we're, like the other managers, very defensive, because when rates turn, we could be looking at a negative number. And that's where Steve was saying, is that we're encouraging, you know, a lot of our clients, particularly if they're relying on any of this money for budget shortfalls, you know, we need to think in terms of, you know, how much cash do you want, and are you focused, what your priority is, cash or total return. But for the time being, you know, our strategy to manage the benchmark is very much a barbell. So happy to answer any questions, you know, related to that.
How is your July going?
We were right on top of the index. I don't have the exact number, but we get a weekly performance report, and we look at that, and we look to see if there's anybody where we're behind the index to be concerned about, and there weren't any. So we're right on top of the index. I don't know what the right number, what the exact number was, but we were pretty close to the benchmark.
White smoke? Green and red.
Motion to accept the PFM report.
Second.
I like the notes to, that Rick joined us at 9:55. Okay. Bogdan, it's your turn.
Okay. If you'll turn your attention to the Bogdan book, perhaps I can give a very brief overview. It seems that we have a consensus strategically between the managers. Everyone is cautious on the duration, pretty much slightly short. There seems to be a slight emphasis, although certainly not a pedal down, pedal to the metal emphasis on spread product with modest overweights in corporates and in some cases in mortgages. And everyone seems to be fairly close to the curve, but in some cases, maybe a little more emphasis on that roll down the curve. But everyone seems to be also of the mindset that the recovery will be slow. Though I don't think anyone's calling for a double dip, so the portfolios are positioned just for your benefit, Rick, along those lines in there. I think also one of the issues that came up during the quarter with regard to manager performance, just everyone was a little bit under the benchmark for the period. If you turn to page 8, and again, very brief, just summary. From our perspective, taking the 50,000 look at what transpired, the top right box for the quarter, shows the various sectors broken down by quality, and governments represented in yellow there. As was communicated, treasuries clearly dominated returns with that flight to quality for the quarter, up 4.3%. And the higher quality you had, the higher the returns, but again, an overweight in corporates tended to put a little, leave a little money on the table because of the market price performance for that period. So I think what was stated is pretty consistent with the results, and hopefully the small amount of underperformances experienced for the quarter, I think what was communicated makes sense and what happened in the environment. Let's go to page 11. And here's the overview of the allocation as of June 30th. If you take a look at the bottom right table, basically we closed the books with 161,220,770 all in, and managers are allocated Sawgrass with 66.9 million, PFM 47.4 million, and Stable River with 46.8 million. So from an allocation standpoint, on a percentage, about 41.5% represented by Sawgrass, 29.4 PFM, and 29.1 to Stable River. So on page 13, from a target allocation standpoint, we're pretty close in the allocations. No big changes there. We didn't see any issues to point out or any need to rebalance from our perspective monitoring that on the aggregate allocation level. So let's go to page 15, and let me take you through the aggregated cash flow here. And if you follow with me in the gray line, there's the total fund. And on the quarter to date, basically, again, opening with 158,649,786. Looking across, basically no flows whatsoever during the period. The income component of returns totaled 1,324,076. The appreciation, which I think was communicated well, totaled 1,246,908. So again, very nice quarter for total return for bonds. And we took the snapshot June 30th with 161,220,770. Any questions on the cash flow? Okay, let's turn the dollars into percentage gains. And again, we confirm all the numbers reported by the managers. So looking at the total fund, the aggregated effort there, net of the manager fees, you added 1.62% for the quarter, and I think was appropriately communicated. We don't want to take a multiple of four times that and project that out. Very nice quarter. On a fiscal year to date, net 3.29%, and again, it's a total return number. And year over year, you annualized at 5.3%. And if I'm not mistaken, I think we're at the soft desired benchmark rate of return, maybe slightly low on the wish list, but again, on an annualized basis, it's turning into be a pretty good year, particularly considering concerns over rate rises that were communicated maybe 6 months ago. Looking at the total fund relative to the benchmark, the total policy benchmark, 5.72%, a little bit below for the period, and I think the reasons were communicated accurately. The benchmark universe was the median return was 5% in your universe. So you actually did exceed the peer group, and on a year-over-year basis, you're at the 45th percentile, again, one being best, 100th being worst. For the quarter, you popped way up to the top 17th percentile, and again, we want to be careful, as always, in the universe data, because it's not a direct apples-to-apples, and as things fell out this quarter, because of the nature of this portfolio, you did have a slight advantage over the peer group. And one more comment, I want to go back to the value add to the program. Again, as previously communicated, all your managers have done a very nice job for you maneuvering through what previously obviously was a very, very difficult period. The investment policy was revised, John, for your benefit, back on 12/31/09, and it was a policy, the benchmark included investment grade, and the restrictions were actually single A or better. So actually, all through that period, the recovery period, when the lowest quality trumped by far the higher quality total return bonds, your investment managers kept pace very nicely with the other strategies that were communicated. So, you know, I think looking at the value add of the program from a longer term and taking that handicapped, if I can say that, perspective, they've done a good job. Again, as of 12/31/09, we did modify the benchmark, so now it is against the high-grade benchmark. You don't have to flip to the compliance section, but we are out of compliance relative to the benchmark total fund for performance, but that's the reason why. The fund was handicapped because they could not buy triple B or lower rated investment grade, but the benchmark permitted that, and during that period of time, that was by far the best performing area of the benchmark. So we remedied that with a new investment policy. So we're just not ready to roll that full 1 year calculation over on that. We've got, obviously that has to run out before that kicks in. Just quickly, Sawgrass, as you can imagine, with the tight returns here, while we're on page 16, Sawgrass for the quarter, 17th percentile, year over year, 49th percentile. Stable River, 17th percentile, year over year, 33rd percentile. Again, citing a nice recovery. PFM, 15th percentile, with their better performance, squeaked a few notches higher, and year over year, 43rd percentile. And of course, looking at the longer term aggregate numbers, you know, very nice peer group comparisons there. So no issues on our part to report on there. One last page, if I may, page 21. And again, just that longer term perspective. Purpose of this page is to be in a position to make judgments on the aggregate decisions, looking at more meaningful chunks of time. And if you follow with me on the top right box on that page, what we're looking at here is the 3-year rolling percentile ranking for 5 years. So basically we're taking 3-year chunks of time and we're advancing it every quarter for a total of 5 years. And that's a pretty good gauge or time period to gauge progress. And in gray you can see the peer group percentiles. Happily, the blue boxes, which is your actual experience, you've been consistently pretty much in the top quartile on that rolling basis, and you've been pretty much consistently above the benchmark in red. So no issues to report. I just have to disclose for the record, of course, that you know, that one compliance issue and compliance page is on page 30, and that pertained to the 1 year performance. And given the benchmark issues and how that was changed, we don't have an issue with that flag. I just want to make sure that's qualified and everyone understands the basis for that non-compliance. That's all we had. Any questions for the Bogdan report?
No questions.
I do just have one thing to point out. Change in investment policy is something I happen to notice. It looks like the maximum amount we have for the local government surplus fund, trust fund, is 25% here. I think I noticed in some of the reports there were none, but they had a 50% limit. Some of the reports on the last, is this a change from the last policy we had?
Yeah, some of the limits were changed.
I don't think it's an issue, but I did notice that there was some difference between the what some of the reports have as far as the maximum amount for over the surplus, you know, some of the reports.
Okay.
In case it comes up at some point.
Okay. We'll regroup with everyone on that to make sure we're all on the same limits reported.
I'll make a motion to accept the bid.
Second.
Thank you. Item number eight, I just went in brief, wanted to find out what your understanding of the Dodd-Frank Act that Obama has signed into law on July 21st, as far as not really the bond side of it, issuing bonds, but as far as regulations and how the funding of the GAO is going to transpire. Have you all gotten any feedback as far as what's happening as far as the Wall Street Reform Protection Act goes?
Wow, that's a big question. I'll have a couple of broad comments. One, I think it's driving very fast, looking in the rearview mirror. So whatever the last problems were, they're addressing that. We talked about some of the fees at Bank America. Private corporations are going to find a way to maximize their returns within whatever regulatory environment. So the money is going to be called something different. In terms of addressing some of the broader issues, they're kind of all been designed in a framework, and they're going to push it down to the regulators to actually make the rules. They didn't really address all of the rules, and now the lobbyists and the regulators are going to battle to see how tough of a bill we end up getting. I think generally Wall Street and the big banks have shown themselves to be not model corporate citizens, if you will, and they're getting their hands slapped and their pocket picked to try to make up for that. A couple of broader issues that have yet to be addressed are Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I think that's probably the next most important one, is how do they address those behemoths, and they have a tremendous impact on Main Street. I've anecdotally seen regular folks try to get a refinance just to get the new current lower rates and have been denied because they're now 81% LTV, not 80. Just lots of ticky-tack-tack little rules that they're not following. It's prohibiting people paying 6% to come in and get the 4% rate that's currently in the market. So I think, having said that, It's a good first step. We're going to wait and see what the bill turns out to be in the end. Some of the higher risk-taking that people like Goldman Sachs were doing, they're going to be told that they're going to have to step a little bit further away from the risk-taking, which makes it a sounder system. All in all, the world will not collapse, but they didn't solve all the issues.
Well, I think the main thing is we just want to be as proactive as we possibly can, knowing that there's probably only been 10 people read the 2,000 pages to date. But, you know, just want to make sure you keep it on the radar screen. If you see red lights going off or red flags, get back to us and not wait for a quarter to be.
I guess following the order, echoing Dave's comments, at this point it's very macro, and obviously we're still in the process.
That's
of pointing.
The part.
Yeah. And we don't know what
those that are going to oversee the ultimate line items that they get booked. Very important question. Agree. And you know, we're continuing to watch and see what evolves, but at this point, you know, short of proprietary trading and some of the bank structures and non-bank structures that maybe at a high level have been addressed, we're still waiting to see what the nuts and bolts of the legislation are going to be. But very important question.
Well, the legislation itself is actually done. It's just now the ruling standpoint.
Right. And how it's going to be
exactly
interpreted.
Right. And now the legislators, the regulators have to now actually write the rules, but the bill itself has been completed and signed. But you're right, now it's the details, and there's a big struggle for you on the issuing of the bonds, as the MSRB is now deciding on how much more staff they have to put in place. They're going to be regulating the financial advisors, which is all brand new. This is just for the issuance of debt, municipal debt. That'll be interesting.
Well, it's probably going to end up costing us more money moving forward, when we were probably the most stable part of, you know, the investment, anyone's investment portfolio was municipal bonds to begin with. Yeah. But we're going to help pay the bill somewhere else. And so I guess to some degree, if there's some timelines that are coming out and we have a deal that we're looking at, if we can get ahead of something because it's advantageous to do that versus waiting, that's
right,
where we would,
right,
like to have some heads up. You know, if we can jump in and get something before, if it makes sense to do that.
Long term, we think it's going to be good for the bondholders of the bank debt. There's going to be less leverage in the system, which is a positive for debt holders.
It's kind of the opposite of Reaganomics, though. There's going to be more regulation. There's going to be more see-through.
Right.
It's going to be harder to make the regulation. It's going to be harder to...
I mean, the SEC has come out and said they need to add 700 jobs.
Mm-hmm. Right. Growth industry.
There you go. Compliance is the place to be.
They can bill it as part of the job, Bill.
Compliance is the place to be.
But if the cost of issuance and regulation goes up, the amount of return is going to be impact.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's certainly an unforeseen cost yet. I mean, all, you know, SEC adding staff, MSRB adding staff, I mean, that is just going to add the cost of issuance, because the compliance component of our respective positions and companies is just increasing. We'd all suspect to be adding compliance officers and staff to all of our companies more and more, and that's going to add into our overhead and cost. So,
of course, with Amendment 4, we pass this, we'll probably never need a bond issue anyway. So.
Okay.
Yes.
Good news in that. Yeah. Pass anyway.
Yeah.
But it does look like it's going to be regulated, much like OSHA, that you're going to have to be self-funded as you go through it, so you're going to pay as you go. But it looked very ambiguous. You got 360 days that they're going to write regulation on it, and we don't know what that is.
3 to 5 years, I'm like, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Funding GASB, that.
Yeah. Right.
The funds GASB.
Right.
We
hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or do away with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. With that, everything's been covered on the agenda. I move to go ahead and close the meeting with one footnote. We've already preset the calendar for next year. Next quarter, I'm going to set up the dates for the next year. And also,
we do have a date for next quarter, right?
Yes, sir. I move for adjournment. Let it be known that we got out of here at 10:15.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.